You're listening to DraftKings Network.
OG.
Make some noise.
Hi, I'm John Strong. I'm the large bald man who stands next to Stu Holden when you watch soccer on Fox Sports. You are listening to The Cooligans.
Yeah, baby!
Whoa! Hello!
Come on!
Welcome! Look at this. A second
episode in a week!
Look at that. Even with all the hubbub, all the Twitter mentions.
Buddy, there's a lot of hoopla.
Yes, there's a lot of noise right now going on at Cooligans HQ.
Yeah, a lot of noise for the Cooligans boys.
So we found the time to, make sure that we are still providing that sweet, sweet content for the Gully Squad. So...
Thank God you said content. I was like, what is he going to say after? Sweet, sweet.
You know, I mean, it's just a euphemism for what I really wanted to say.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I just want to start before we say anything about the U.S. Open Cup and the roster and all that. I just want to say what an insane honor and outpouring it has been to just see the love that we're getting for our announcement, which we teased for, what was it, 6 months? 6-7 months?
Yes. We were saying, hey, you know what? I hope something good happens in the next 18 months. And everybody was like, ooh, they must have news.
Yeah, I mean, just keep listening to the podcast, baby. At some point in the next year or two, we will be announcing some good news. But I mean, you mentioned this in your post, but, you know, this is something that I don't think you or I have ever, you know, besides our relationships with our significant others, and specifically when it comes to comedy, I don't think you and I have ever just fully committed to something and worked as hard at something as we have for this, and to keep this going. And even at moments where it felt like, you know, maybe it wasn't growing at the pace we wanted, or we weren't getting opportunities we wanted, we always believed that people out there wanted to laugh about soccer, specifically American soccer. And we're getting to a point now where we've kind of gotten some like accolades for that, and that this feels insane to know that this many people were sort of watching and kind of, you know, following along.
Yeah, it is shocking, you know, because a lot of times with podcasts, you see the number, you see like, oh, that it was downloaded, but you don't actually see the person, you don't attach a human being to that like statistic of who's actually listening. And then when something good happens, and yeah, it's exciting, you know, we're getting our own TV show and it's insane, and then people are showing gratitude and support and being like, you know, I'm happy this happened for you. That kind of love is just, you know, it's priceless. It's a nice feeling, and the hope is to, the work doesn't stop now. It's only more work moving forward.
Yeah, no, this is leading to hopefully, you know, more opportunity. Like for us, it feels like now we're starting, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel that way. I mean, we've been at this for a while, Alexis. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I mean, like now we're going to be getting given a platform, you know,
now you're finally going to take it seriously. So I'm glad that's happening.
Wait, hold on. Now I got to show up every week.
So that's at least one positive of this whole thing. But no, man, yes. Thank you again to everybody who sent a kind message, a tweet, a text. We appreciate it. So,
DMs, the emails. It was just absolutely insane. And everyone who shared it, you know, like, I think the video of us unboxing the jerseys is what? At like 60-70K on Twitter. I mean, it's just
yeah, it's crazy. It's at 95,000 views.
And how many?
95,000. We've never, there's nothing. Holy. We don't have anything that popular. There's nothing we have that.
No. The yeah. only thing bigger than that is our egos. I mean, that is that is insane. Yeah. 95,000. Well, actually, shouts to you guys.
The most popular thing that we have, the most viewed thing we have is my GIF of saying, "I got you, fam." That is the most popular thing we've ever made.
I just want to make a quick correction. Our GIF.
Our.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's a GIF of me, but it is our GIF.
It was. I directed it. Okay.
Alexis wants.
And also, it was my idea to say, "I got you, fam."
Yeah, totally. Who knows? Whatever. And it's very important. This is what's gonna break us up. These little.
This right here is the GIF.
This little. This GIF is going. Who gets credit? I want royalties for this GIF.
I can't wait for VH1's Behind the GIF. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, we are, you know, we talk about this all the time. Like, we're so thankful for everyone who listens and blah, blah, blah. And we absolutely are. And anytime that someone stops us in the street or at a game or says like, "Yo, I love it." Or someone sends an email, like someone bought a Cooligans hat for their significant other because they're such a big fan of ours, you know, and they message just to make sure we get there in time for their birthday. Those types of things always mean the world to us. Never has all of it seemed to have happened all at once.
Well,
you know?
I don't know why you said all that, because I think you ruined the surprise. Why are you saying all of this? That was a surprise.
No, because that happened like a year ago. What kind of a surprise would that ruin?
That didn't happen a year ago.
Shut up, Christian.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Ridiculous.
Play
anyway.
Along. This is why I'll never rob a bank with you, for God's sakes.
Because you're going to be talking
one
to
of the reasons.
You're going to be talking to the cops about, like, hey, you know, it's like this bank gets robbed a lot. It's crazy.
yeah, shouldn't it? You know,
it shouldn't
you should
happen.
Maybe up the security, especially through the back door.
Anyway.
What should we call it? But anyway, also, I want to give a shout out to all the people who start, like all the big names who started following us now. We see what you're doing. You want to get on the show, baby.
Okay, we respect your hustle, all right? We get
it. Oh, I love it. If anything, I respect you more for being like, nah, I don't know who those dudes are. And then all of a sudden be like, no, okay, I've loved them the whole time.
I've been day one, okay? Desde la cuna, all right? I've been on.
It's like day one. This is day one today, though, right?
Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize you guys were doing anything, but yeah, I'm glad that this new venture that you guys are going on is. I'm excited to get on board at the beginning, right? So
yeah, they're like, I wonder what it's going to sound like.
Okay, this is. I'm excited about this concept. Comedians talking about soccer, really cool. Never been done before.
You're like, well, that clearly has never been covered before, so this will be exciting.
So it's going to be great. And yeah, we're excited about the future. And but like we said on our last episode, nothing is changing. You're still getting a podcast. We're still doing extra episodes for the Gully Squad, and still giving that extra content for you guys. So we're gonna
And we're gonna be putting up some behind the scenes kind of stuff from our show in Gully Squad. And so, like, if you want to see that, you know what I mean? Join Gully Squad. SoccerCooligans.com/Gully Squad.
Exactly. Well, the is not part of the hyperlink, but yes.
No, you say that as the page loads, and it'll load faster.
Correct. So if you guys haven't listened to the show before, if this is your first time, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
Okay, we are your favorite stand-up comedians out here in New York City. And, well, I'm technically right on the border. I'm in New Jersey. And we host the funniest soccer podcast that you've ever listened to.
That's right. It's not just that, though, okay?
Not at all.
No, I mean, it's so much more. It's the most TV-able podcast you've ever heard before.
Correct.
That's for sure. But it just so happens to be the gulliest soccer podcast.
That's right. All right, we bring that energy to anything that we do, and we're just gonna bring that gulliness to television. That's all. No big deal.
Yeah, now we're gonna jump from being mad gully in your ears to being wild gully in your eyes, dog.
That's right. Okay, you know, wear those protective glasses that old people wear. You're gonna need those.
Remember blue blockers?
Yeah.
Remember them joints? That's what you're going to need.
Okay. It's going to.
What were those Terminator goggles? The glasses that they had, like, old people wear over their glasses. You remember them joints?
I don't know what they're called, but.
They look like safety goggles, but they have like they don't have like a strap on them. And they were convincing old people to wear them over their glasses. So like a bunch of old women walking around looking like Terminator.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, just a couple assassins walking through looking for the blue plate special.
So, yes, we are. So this episode is coming out on Friday, August 30th. And we do these are for the Gully Squad members. So you can thank them for the extra content. So again, we mentioned
that's
before.
Right. Salute them when you see them.
Exactly. When we try to get to sometimes we can't get to everything on our weekly episode that comes out on Wednesday, so we do some extra ones to cover some stuff that we may have missed or to talk about things that happened throughout the week after we recorded, right? So one of the things we didn't get to last episode was the hiring of Robin Fraser for the Colorado Rapids. So he was the assistant coach at Toronto, obviously a good record with Greg Vanney, and you know, success winning an MLS Cup, winning the Supporter Shield. Also a former MLS coach. He was a coach for Chivas USA, which, as we all know, worked out great for everyone.
Perfect, right?
All parties involved, right?
So, we'll always be remembered fondly, I think.
But he gets his second opportunity coaching in Major League Soccer for Colorado. He's a Colorado native, and from everything, I don't know too much about Robin Fraser, but I didn't know much about him beforehand. But from all the interviews I've been seeing, this seems like an opportunity he's incredibly excited about, and he was almost getting like emotional talking about it.
I didn't know this, but apparently he played back in the ASL days for the Colorado team. He says he was not from Colorado, but he
ASL,
feels like he was raised
is that
there.
Is it really? Was yeah. it really called the age, sex, location on like AOL? Like I am? Is that what is it?
Bruh, I mean, I don't know what he was playing, what position he was playing. Yeah.
Okay.
Your official position was doggy? I mean, that's not real. You okay. Put that in your IMDb, my guy? I mean, in your LinkedIn?
Very interesting. Okay. It must have been a real fun league. Okay.
Well, who played reverse cowgirl that one season?
Well, good.
Ridiculous.
Good on him. Good on him. But the interesting thing about Robin Fraser, he is one of the few black head coaches that are being hired in MLS. And if you don't follow Pablo Maurer, he writes for The Athletic, and there's an article that he's, I believe, been updating from time to time, but he wrote a great article about just the very poor statistics for the opportunities for black head coaches in Major League Soccer. And within the entire existence of Major League Soccer, I think there've been less than like 8 black head coaches, if I'm not mistaken, but the even when a new job opens up, the opportunities are not really there. Like I believe MLS doesn't have like the Rooney Rule, which like the NFL has, where every coaching position that's vacant, they have to interview a certain amount of minority head coaches. I could be wrong about this. I don't know, but I don't know of like this rule that it is in place. It could be, but the reality is for black.
That's so cool of the NFL to name it after Wayne Rooney.
They were really looking out for.
It's like, let's get the whitest person we can find. So it was called the Taylor Swift Rule for a while, but they decided to go with Rooney Rule.
Glad they updated it. Once Wayne Rooney got his hair implants, they were like, you know, we should update this in honor.
Yeah, we gotta switch this up a little bit.
What is it? It's Rooney Mara, right? That's where it was named after, one of the owners, the Giants head owner. What's the other? He has the daughter that the actress. Right? Is it Rooney? No, yeah. Not Rooney Mara is the actress. Who is the
Wellington Mara.
Wellington Mara. Yes, of course. But you, if you,
beef it, Wellington Mara.
If you're named Wellington, there's no way you can't be a billionaire. It is just that is how it works. I'm going to name my child Wellington, I think.
There's no poor person that's ever been named Wellington. Because that guy gets called Welly. You know what I mean?
Yo, Welly, what's good?
Yo, Welly, what's your real name? It's Welly, dog. Shut up.
Yeah. Papa Doc, when he was like,
yeah,
your real name's Clarence, and you got good parents. You got to hide such a, depending on what neighborhood you grew up in, you got to hide your real name. You know what I mean? It's too.
Yeah, he chanted like, "Hi, Clarence." That was like the big thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. And Clarence's parents have a real good marriage. Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
I love Eminem references, just like Alexis does. It's his favorite rapper.
I hate him.
But I'm excited about, look, the Colorado Rapids having any kind of, just having somebody who's passionate about the city, passionate about the team, is a lot to look forward to. And based on what I've seen so far, he clearly cares because, you know, there's a lot of people that go to Colorado and we were talking to Benny Fellhaber and they were, after a couple games, they're like, I got to get out of here because things are not on the up and up. It's nice to see people getting on that ship and trying to keep it afloat.
Yeah, I mean, I think Colorado needed somebody who was like a hometown hero. And like I said before, he may not have been born there, but he spent the majority of his 20s there, and he feels like he was raised there. He feels like Colorado is a part of his life. And to him, it was coming home. So leaving Colorado, leaving Toronto, leaving a perpetual playoff team, so to speak. I know they've had a rough go of it the past few, but they've been, you know, in so many different competitions. Now him going back to Colorado, he's going to be like, yo, he is the hero. Like, he relieved the plague.
Yes, he came here. I was impressed that he did all his interviews in a hazmat suit. That was quite the symbol.
He was in a breakout suit. He's like, spray me down.
Okay, I'll sign. I swear. You know.
Yeah. He's like, I ain't let my kids live here.
Y'all got the plague, yo. I mean, get that sorted out, and then maybe I'll look at enrolling them in an elementary school. I'm working on it. So
Toronto got free health care. Y'all got the plague.
Okay, you're right. You got to make at least offset with paying me well, because there's a lot of danger.
What is the plague bonus in my contract? I would like a bubonic allocation funds.
That bam. You love it. You love to see it. So, again, yeah, best of luck to Colorado. It's hard seeing. You know, Colorado won an MLS Cup, right? They won one MLS Cup a couple years ago. So they
need a win. They need a win over the last few years.
They
man.
Just need to make it to the playoffs, you know, from time to time. I think their fans will appreciate a little bit, you know. We have some Colorado Rapids fans, those diehards, especially in Gully Squad. We have Jess Hewen, I believe it's pronounced. But she's a Colorado Rapids fan. We met her in Dallas. I don't think you met her in Dallas. She's diehard. I always like look at the people that have been around. You know, she also writes for MLS Female. I always look at the people that have been around, like, you know, the clubs that have, that have not been successful too much the last like couple years. And it's like, it takes a lot. It takes a lot to work, to show up, go to games, really try to get other people on board and excited about the team. So you have to like show respect to these people that have been struggling. The New England Revolution supporter, the Chicago Fire supporters that have just been through it. So it's good to see at least some sense of positivity around the club.
Yeah, for sure. You know how hard it is to convince someone who's not even a soccer fan to go to a game of a team that doesn't win a lot? You know what I mean? It's like, yo, you want to come be sad with us a little bit? No, yeah. But there's alcohol. You know, like, it's not easy.
Oh, that's a depressant? Okay, cool. I'll do it. Yeah.
I got to be honest. I feel like it works then.
So best of luck. All right. So let's get to a couple other things before we do have a great interview that we are playing from MLS All-Star with Charles Bowen,
with the homie,
with the MLSsoccer.com writer. You've seen a bunch of his work. He writes for a lot of publications, but Charles Bowen, he's been on the show before, but we got to talk to him in person at the digital HQ, the MLS digital HQ in Orlando, and we had a great conversation with him. So we'll be playing that a little bit later. So I wanted to talk about the U.S. Open Cup final between Atlanta United and Minnesota United. Atlanta United winning all the trophies. They win another one. 2-1.
You put a trophy in front of them, they're going to win it. They're also going to break it while dancing, you know?
Exactly. Do we have, like, I think Atlanta United, whenever they win a trophy, they need to get, like, insurance like they do on their iPhones. You know what I mean? Like, they just in case they shatter.
They put a case around the trophy.
Okay, we need an OtterBox for the U.S. Open Cup trophy.
Show me, is this waterproof? Because there's going to be a lot of champagne flowing.
Yes, it's funny. They broke the trophy, and they were, like, celebrating with the different pieces of it. So I mean, hopefully they have some duct tape or glue. They shouldn't even glue it pretty, like, nicely back together. They should really just put, like, just a duct tape and hang it and just put it on the shelf, on Arthur Blank's shelf, with just a duct tape a trophy. Just be like, yeah, this is what it looks like now. We have so many trophies, we're breaking them now, you know. We have no
way. Or just like, all right, Jose Martinez gets the actual cup, I get the base.
Yeah.
LGP, you can hold on to the little umbrella looking top for this week. We'll all take pictures with it, and then we'll swap. That way it's a little bit faster. Everybody gets to have it for a day or two.
Exactly.
It's like the Stanley Cup. The only thing I know about the Stanley Cup is every player gets to keep it for like a day or two, right?
Correct. And they get to travel with it. And
they like take it on vacation or whatever, it's theirs.
Yeah, the crazy thing about the Stanley Cup is that it has the plates at the bottom that they etch the winner each time. So the Stanley Cup is only one cup. There's not like, you don't all, you get to, you have to like pass it around. There's until
you don't, they don't make another one the next season.
Yeah. I think the
Lombardi trophy is a different one every year. I think same thing with baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball, MLB's trophy, you get to, that's yours now.
Exactly, exactly. So, but they win this game. And for the most part, I think a lot of people pretty much expected it. Atlanta United at home, especially with the form that they've been in the last couple of weeks. It would have been a bigger upset for them to lose, but they did the job, even though they made it a little scary towards the end, getting LGP picking up a yellow, and then getting the second yellow just minutes after that. It got a little tense, but for the most part, Atlanta United clearly the better team. I was a little surprised Darwin Quintero didn't start this game, given it is a final. I sort of get the strategy. Maybe I think he went 90 in the previous game just a couple days ago, but I don't know. In this situation, it's like, don't you want to put your best player in the game? I don't get. Oh, maybe he was injured. Who knows? Whatever. He ended up playing coming in the second half, but I don't know. I think it was a little bit of some mismanagement, in my opinion, by Adrian Heath.
I mean, it's tough to say because it seemed like as soon as Atlanta goes down to 10 men, you're like, oh, okay, here we go. And it seemed like they didn't really have any answers for that. You know, I don't know that I don't think any of their players would have made a difference in that moment.
Well, I was more frustrated with the, like, if they would have tied it and it went to extra time or penalties or whatever, definitely would have made the game a bit more exciting. But it seemed like the Minnesota United were trying to win off, like, win the set piece battle, right? They have Michael Boxall, they have Aiko Parra, and they kept in the broadcast, they kept talking about how, like, they're, you know, these are the guys that they just were sort of needed to go to because nobody else was really going to kind of step up. And when the game is, if the hope is that you're going to get lucky on a, not even lucky, but if you're going to just win on a set piece, like, how often, you know, the likelihood is not very high. And those guys, they're both good. But to put that much pressure on them to, especially when it was down to, when Atlanta was down to 10 men, I don't think it was like the right strategy, given that like they it didn't seem like they were making too many moves inside the box to like move the ball around and create a great opportunity or get some sort of counter. And the misses, Michael Boxall, Aiko Parra, the miss that Boxall had when he hit it over the bar, it was just like, dude, there's not going to be many opportunities in this game, I'm not even that mad that Boxall hit it over the bar. I was just like, the fact that you're expecting Boxall to get this game tying goal is the problem to begin with. You know?
I mean, here's the thing though. He's a professional soccer player at the end of a final, and the goal is wide open in front of you. I'm not going to sit here and say I could do it, but I'm not a professional soccer player. He is.
Yes.
You have to finish those chances.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was no one in front of him. So I don't care if it's the third string goalkeeper that is being asked to play center back. You are in front of goal. It is legitimately all he had to do was not put his foot in the position he did.
Yeah. He just like, it looked like he can't, he can't stretch his groin that much, you know, like he couldn't get his foot over the ball enough. And it didn't seem necessarily like the ball was coming at him that fast, but it did feel a little, you know, a little Wando-ish, right? From the World Cup. It's just like, man.
I'm sure he loves the fact that we're using his name this way.
Wando loves that. He's like, oh, I'm glad I'm not.
He Wandoed?
Glad I'm known for that. All good.
Yeah. You know, an entire career, just goal scoring leader in MLS history.
Glad.
Sure. Let's reference the one worst play of my career.
Glad I'm leaving a lasting legacy. You know, some people don't even have that. But no, man, it's unfortunate. It could have, I still think even an extra time, probably Atlanta United wins this game. Maybe in penalties or something like that. But I wish Minnesota brought a little more. Especially to a final, and it was cool to see the it was like 35,000 people attended a U.S. Open Cup final, which is the record now. It's good to see. I think Atlanta's success, even within this tournament, gives the tournament more notoriety because the U.S. Open Cup can be and should be what the FA Cup is, having these like just great stories of you know, small clubs, you know. The liquor stores that field a soccer team that end up beating an MLS team, like those are the things that we want to see. And it was cool to see Taylor Twellman he does this every year, but he gives suggestions of like how we should make the U.S. Open Cup better, usually by adding a bigger, more prize money, making it cheaper.
A bigger pot, absolutely.
Making it cheaper for the smaller clubs to enter, things like that. And the last few that he suggested were teams that don't make it to the MLS playoffs should be entered around early. So as opposed to just the non-MLS clubs playing first in the first two rounds or two or three rounds. And then he also suggested the first round of games that MLS teams are in, those should all be played away. Those should all be played at the home stadium of whatever the club that they're playing against, which, again, would make it super cool to have these MLS teams in these smaller venues and make
it. Yeah, it's great when you watch, like, the FA Cup and, you know, you've got, like, Manchester United away at, like, you know, dang them in red, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, yeah, that's dope. You got Manchester United fans and, you know, dang them in red, or dag in red, whatever
they're
called.
It does a lot. It does a lot for soccer in that area, right? It gets them more excited.
Yeah, I mean, the place gets, what is it, like 5,000 seats and it's filled, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a great atmosphere. Like, that's what you want to see.
There was
it brings more revenue to those teams.
There was a hilarious video that's going around of Richarlison from Everton. So Everton were playing in the Carabao Cup, which is just the League Cup that they another tournament that they play in, and they start early, right? It goes on throughout the year.
And they played Lincoln City, right?
They played Lincoln City, which is, I think, a division. Are they even in the championship? I think they might be League One. I don't remember. I don't know what league they're in necessarily.
Well, Carabao Cup is just for all the people in the football league, so no one outside of League Two.
Okay, so I don't know where they play right now, but Lincoln City, that small club, a lot smaller than Everton. They were Lincoln City was they tied the game 1-1 because Everton is not good. They're not a good team right now, but they ended up winning, and Richarlison got the fourth goal in the 88th minute. But Richarlison, so they're in League One. League One, not a strong club by any means, especially compared to a Premier League side. But Richarlison scores in the 88th minute and goes up to the fans in the crowd and takes off his shirt and holds up the shirt like Messi did where against Real Madrid after he scored.
Similar stakes.
just like at the Bernabeu, he just goes up there and he holds up his shirt to establish the dominance that he holds over the club. But Richarlison does this to Lincoln City, right? Which is already like, it's more embarrassing that he's doing this, right?
And I mean, is it though? Because Lincoln City has never beaten Everton as far as I know.
But it's just, so I guess it's consistent with like what this sort of means, but it is still ridiculous that he's doing this to such a small club. But the best part was that Richarlison, he's holding up his jersey, and Messi, he would hold up the kit, but he was showing everybody his name. He'd be like, yo, Messi.
Yeah, he was showing everyone the Messi and the number.
Yes.
Not Richarlison. Richarlison was looking at his own name.
He was looking at his own name. So he's showing everybody the Everton badge and the Angry Birds logo on the sleeve. So
you know what it was? He wasn't even care about the fans. He was looking at his own name. He was like, God, I'm good.
Who scored that? Okay, cool. That's great.
Oh, it was me? Oh, why am I cold? Oh, yeah, that's right. I took my jersey off.
So just absurd. Just ridiculously comical. So hopefully, I mean, look, it makes it worse because they're going to end up losing to some, championship side in the damn Carabao Cup anyway.
They're all going to hold their jerseys up to Richarlison. You know it.
So I hope they do, man. What else before we get to, anything else?
From the 23-man roster surprise you?
You know what? Yes, Jesse Gonzalez, a goalkeeper for FC Dallas, because I remember, you know, he made the switch from Mexico to the U.S. men's national team, and in the hopes that he was going to like kind of secure a spot. You know, he was doing that during the time when FC Dallas, when they won Supporter Shield, when they won U.S. Open Cup, and they were in good form, and then he just fell out. I don't know what happened. The dude ended up getting benched, and it's good to see him back at FC Dallas with the starting job and getting some big saves so he's been doing maybe the Luchi Gonzalez just being there maybe kind of re-energized him, motivated him again. But it's nice to see, you know, FC Dallas are still like in that playoff hunt where they're kind of in that right above the line, right under it, back and forth. There's a lot of teams. The Western Conference is really close, but Jesse Gonzalez is like keeping them in game sometimes. So that was kind of the big surprise to me. And also the new folks, Serginho Dest from Ajax.
That's who I'm excited to see. Defender from Ajax, but he's starting for Ajax and looking good.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, if you haven't listened to like Total Soccer Show or and also Scuffed, the Scuffed podcast, that's another good resource to like just learn about players in the U.S. pool that are kind of doing stuff around the world, and that's Scuffed is like kind of where I heard more about Serginho Dest, because I didn't know, one, I didn't even know he was American. I think his father is American.
He's serviceman.
Sure. And we got to thank those heroes, right? You know,
Thank you for smashing overseas, dog.
Exactly. This is what veterans, they really should be about. Okay.
I mean, this is how we're going to win the war on soccer. You know, get okay. these ab-laden soldiers.
Did you hear? There's this article going around. Did you see the article going around about Trump saying that the children of servicemen and women will not get birthright citizenship? Going forward,
they're ruining everything. This Trump.
All right. So now this is when Trump has gone too far. Okay, you know.
Yeah, he's affecting potential U.S. soccer prospects.
You know, everyone. I can speak for the entire country. We all tolerated the caging of children.
Yes,
the constant disrespect towards women and your peers and all other politicians. We tolerated all of that, but this is when you've gone too far, sir. Okay?
How dare you? You know what? When you went for everyone else, we said nothing. But now you've come for us.
You know, and that's our fault. You know, we definitely should have been a bit more courageous throughout all the atrocities. But we are where we are.
Yeah. You know, we should have said something sooner. Luckily, hopefully that doesn't go through. I was going to say luckily. Now I'm saying hopefully for everything. But folks like Serginho Dest, like, these are opportunities that we have that we can now fill in the roster. You know what I mean? Like, when it was Jurgen Klinsmann and half the squad was German-American, you know, you never really sort of had a connection with a lot of those players. Certainly some of them became household names in the soccer community. You know, no one more, I think, than Jermaine Jones. But when you get players like this that sort of can fill a position we need, play in a system not too dissimilar to what Greg Berhalter wants to play, tactically or technically very good with their feet, things like that. Now all of a sudden you're like, all right, this isn't just saying like, yo, you German, so you better. It's like, yo, now all of a sudden you fit in. I'm really looking forward to see what he brings. And I'm excited for Paxton Pomykal and Jackson Yule. I mean, these two players, I think, are gonna shine a little bit. These are friendlies anyway, right? Like, these aren't that important, even though we're playing Mexico, you know?
Yeah.
Are we playing Mexico? Yeah, we are playing Mexico. First game, right?
One of the games, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, this is it's a great opportunity to see what these kids can do. Paxton Pomykal has been amazing. Also, yo, Christian Pulisic is listed as a forward, yo.
Okay.
Hey. All right, we switching it up.
Well, he's been playing on the wing at Chelsea, right? He's been playing at the left wing. And we actually haven't really spoken about Christian Pulisic and his three games that he played in the Super Cup, is that what it is? The Europa and
Champions.
Yeah,
he played in the Super Cup, which was Europa and Champions League winner against each other.
Yes, and he got the
assist. Which was a nice practice run for Liverpool.
Sure, exactly. But they look, I mean, he got an assist. Who got the goal? Who's the forward for Chelsea? Played at Arsenal. What's his name?
Yeah, I can't remember his name right now.
I can't remember. Anyway, but yes, the Frenchman. Anyway,
Giroud.
Giroud, yeah. So he's looked okay. I'm, you know, we were kind of talking about Christian Pulisic and what he would look like at Chelsea, and that he was gonna kind of struggle, and he wasn't really playing much at Dortmund and things like that. But this is my main concern with Christian Pulisic in the Premier League. He is, I think, physically a little too small, and he needs a little bit more muscle. He's not as fast as this dude. What's his name? From why am I? I can't remember any names. He's not as fast as from Leicester City. The forward.
Who? Vardy?
Vardy. Jamie Vardy. He's not fast like that. So Jamie Vardy, because he. I remember there was an interview where he said, like, you know, somebody asked him like what his training regimen was and stuff like that, and he was like, I don't work out. I was like, it's just gonna make me slower. So that's
he's just Christian, ripping cigarettes and drinking a Bud Light.
he doesn't like lift. He doesn't like. He's not trying to gain any mass. But Christian Pulisic, I think he should be a little bit stockier, like Pedro. Pedro is like a little.
I disagree completely. I think
he's getting pushed around. Look at what players like easily.
No, look at like what Maxi Morales. First of all, Maxi Morales has played in much more physical leagues, and he is not physically imposing at all. He uses his tactical awareness and ability to get away from you. That's what Christian Pulisic needs to do more of.
I agree. I wish he did do that and could do that. I don't think that's necessarily the strength of his game. I think he has incredible burst speed, and people kind of don't expect the next move he's going to make, but he's not wildly technical. He's a good passer, and I think he has good vision, but I would say... He's getting pushed around a little bit. He's getting pushed off the ball fairly easily, and yes, he could tactically figure out how to not be in those positions as often. But I think it would help because I just don't want to see Sweet Baby Pulisic get pushed around all day.
Sweet Baby Pulisic.
That's the first like weakness sort of that I see that I think would be a little bit of an improvement, but I'm happy to see him be more. He's more comfortable and more acclimated than I honestly expected. And he's already played against some pretty big teams. Obviously Liverpool, and they did get their first win. But he already has two assists. You know, like on the season, which I did not expect that. I just didn't think he was gonna acclimate himself that quickly. And I think
you should believe in our heroes a little more, dude.
That's my problem. You know, I think I'm un-American. That's what I'm being right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what all the listeners are thinking right this moment.
Nobody else. We see Giazzi's art is there again. And it's difficult.
Yo, Greg Berhalter loves Giazzi's artist. Well,
it's difficult to keep him off the team when he's scoring so much in MLS. I mean, he did score a pair of great goals against Cincinnati. I mean, but it's Cincinnati, so we can't.
Yeah,
go.
But yo, Josh Sargent is another person who completely surprised and happy that he's on the squad because he was left off the Gold Cup squad for who knows what, and that's who should be starting. Josh Sargent, yo. Great, Giazzi Zardes, even if he plays incredibly well, that's not the guy you're going into 2022 World Cup with, okay? He's not a part of your future. Why are we doing this? Sargent needs to start. Sargent's the guy who needs to get a run.
I don't know. I don't think Greg Berhalter agrees with you. I think Giazzi Zardes
would not agree with me. Let's start there. Greg Berhalter have a television show? No. Okay. I hate to flex a little bit here. All right.
Wow, it's really gone in your head, Alexis.
You have no idea. I am going to be unbearable. Now you're thinking you're pretty unbearable now.
Just gonna mush. It's gonna get just worse. Just gonna mush Greg Berhalter. You don't know what you're doing. You even got a TV show. What are you talking about,
bruh? Hey, how many times you sat through hair and makeup, my guy?
I definitely think Giazzi Zardes will be on the on that World Cup squad.
You're out of your mind. Giazzi Zardes is like 33 now, isn't he?
No, he's not that old. He's still in his 20s. He might be like 27.
Impossible.
20. He's like 27, 28. Let me see.
I'm going to look this up.
I'm looking it up too. Giazzi Zardes is 27 years old. Yes, he is a lock for the 2022 World Cup, man. He will definitely be there. So
I refuse.
So nothing else really stood out that much to me. I think that the squad is fine. There was that report that the Toronto players, so Omar Gonzalez, Michael Bradley, Jozy Altidore, chose to not go to these friendlies because they want to play in their matches in the league because they are in eighth place in the Eastern Conference and they're trying to get the team into the playoffs. So that was like a little bit of a some fans were like annoyed, some U.S. men's national team fans, like why is it okay for them to make this decision? We're trying to, it shouldn't the international
they get booed whenever they play in the American team anyway, so what's the point?
Well, people want the U.S. men's national team to have, some priority, and they don't want, you know, the league to sort of get in the way of that, and that's why people are kind of bothered by it. But I understand it. MLS is a different monster, and we play our games, sometimes within international breaks and things like that. So it is what it is. So some people are unhappy with it, but again, there's a difference between a World Cup qualifier and a friendly, in my opinion. And then at least it gives us the opportunity to see some new faces because a lot of people are not happy with those old faces. Another story that came out was Darlington Nagbe. A lot of people have been asking, why hasn't Nagbe been in any of the, he hasn't gotten any call-ups, and people have been sort of concerned and weirded out. Maybe Greg Berhalter doesn't like him. And then it comes out that apparently Darlington Nagbe has turned down call-ups several times in the last couple international windows. So that kind of brought up a weird debate, especially online. People are like, why is it okay for them to just turn down international call-ups so regularly? Because we were all on the side of like, yo, what is Greg Berhalter doing to boy Nagbe? And it comes out like, oh, maybe he actually didn't even want to be involved.
Yo, I don't mind if a player doesn't want to be a part of the men's national team, but where are the reporters asking them why? This needs to be explored. There needs to be, I don't know, I feel bad saying this because I'm not one of these people that like we deserve to know, but as people who pour their life's effort and money into like the American Outlaws and all that follow the men's national team and how important it is for so many people, if you're callously, is what we're going to assume because we don't know better, callously saying no to that, which is an honor everywhere else in the world, it's your dream to play for your national team. What is the reason? Is it something the national team hasn't done? This could help future generations. We need to know more. This isn't just a simple, I didn't want to play. You know what I mean? We need to know why.
I'm sure there's more to the story. I haven't seen much more about it, but I'm sure a lot of people will be asking, especially during this international, during these friendlies, people are probably going to ask the question. So just a thing to keep an eye on for everybody. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was that the schedule for the MLS playoffs has been released. We know now, decision day, obviously, October 6th, and then the first round one matches will be happening the weekend of the 19th and the 20th, October 19th and 20th, and then the semifinal matches will be semifinal and then conference final. So semifinal 23rd, 24th, and then conference finals 29th, 30th, and then the cup final November 10th. So the thing that stands out here is to me, there is a long break from decision day to the first playoff game. So the decision day is October 6th. So the next MLS game will be happening October 19th. So that is pretty, it's about 2 weeks before a game, which is fine. That's an international break. We understand that. So now the final and all the playoffs are happening within the two breaks. So the international break ends October 15th, and then the international break begins November 11th, November 10th or 11th. And so everything's happening within this window, but there's still a long break. I don't know. It's like the purpose is we have to keep the excitement up, right, for the playoffs. And definitely from the 19th and the 20th through and then the 23rd, 24th, there's going to be a lot of MLS games, a lot of MLS playoffs. Realistically about in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, in 7 days, you'll probably see, and if you watch every game, you're probably watching around 10 games. So that is going to be exciting, right? Those 10 days. And then the following week, you'll see four matches, I believe, and stuff like that. So, I think it's going to be we haven't done this before, so we'll see what it kind of all feels like. But there is still a pretty long break from the conference finals to the about a 10-day break from the last playoff game to the final.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm, you know, it'll give everyone sort of a chance to resettle. And yeah, I think it'll also give out media such a strong opportunity to really break down the game and to talk about, you know, who's going against who and positions and formations and the whole nine. It'll be fun. It'll be nice sort of media fodder.
Yeah. And then the MLS Cup final will be airing in the United States on ABC. All right.
That's right.
Right,
ABC.
You don't even need a cable subscription, okay? You just go.
Nah, yo, you can have that weird sort of thing you stick to your window that some people have.
It's called an antenna, Alexis.
Yeah, whatever. Antennas are metal and long and stick out of Cadillacs.
Okay, you break them off and you hit your kids with it, right? That's how
yeah,
it works.
Yeah, of course. Everybody knows that. You can't watch no TV on
okay.
that.
It's parenting 101. We all know this.
But this is exciting. I know TV is dying, right? Like linear television, but which is
yeah,
why we chose streaming.
TV is dying, and we're getting a television show. Great timing.
Nah,
for us.
But we're streaming, baby. We're streaming. We're the future.
Yes, we are. So, it's going to be cool, and we're going to be at the MLS Cup final wherever it is, and covering that, and it'll be a lot of fun. So, yes, and we did mention. We are getting a TV show, but not. I don't want to leave this out. But we're also on Fubo TV. Will be also getting a TV show. Julie Stewart Binks.
That's right. Our new sister.
Our new sister. So she is our TV sister. Okay. So she will be having her own show as well. That hopefully, we're working together and doing stuff together. Who knows what the kind of partnership is going to be and what her show is going to be like and stuff like that. But that's another person you need to follow and watch her show as well. Because Fubo's doing, they're making moves and they're trying to, create this like fun, entertaining sports landscape and we're honored to be a part of that. So and we're honored to work with Julie Stewart Binks, a broadcaster who's worked at ESPN, worked for Fox. She's just incredibly talented and skilled and has a wealth of experience, and we're excited to learn a lot from her from how to do this TV thing. I wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
All right, well, you did it. Congrats.
Okay. Alexis has no feelings. He's just, he's okay.
No, yeah. I'm excited. No, yeah, Julie is one of our favorites. We never really got a chance to really communicate with her too much because we would only see her at like, of parties and media events and stuff. And all three of us were busy, but getting a chance to hang out with her a little bit over the past few weeks, she's absolutely awesome. And we can't wait to, work with her.
Exactly. So,
but I do want, there's a rumor going around that the show that we're getting is the same show that she's getting. So it's going to be the three of us. And that is not true. There are two separate shows.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. That was the rumor going around. All right.
Yeah, so a couple people, in their replies were like, oh, I can't wait for the three of them. We most likely will be doing stuff together, but the Cooligans will have a show and Julie Stewart Binks will have a show.
Did the Sun report this? Typical.
Yeah. At this point, I trust someone more if they start their phrase with "Yo, son," than I do "The Son."
The Son, and that was another story that had come out. Wayne Rooney wrote a long message about how the Son. They hired a freelance photographer. Or they paid a freelance photographer that was following around Wayne Rooney in Vancouver during the game where they played the Whitecaps. And apparently there was a woman.
There was a bunch of fans asking for photographs in the hotel. And yeah. he signed one of the ladies. Yeah. And they shot it at an angle. Supposedly, allegedly, according to him, they shot some of the pictures at an angle as to make it look as if they were going into the elevator together.
Yes. And he wrote a long message on that he posted on Twitter being like, yo, this is trash, fam. What are you doing? You're ruining my life and my family. And so it's just some people were like, yo. American soccer has made it. All right. Our players are getting followed around, getting trash articles written about them. All right.
But let me keep it 100, right? Nobody didn't believe it at first, right? Like,
and that's
a lot of history.
That's on Wayne Rooney.
And I'm not, Yeah, that's on Wayne, you know? And yeah. Look, here's the other thing. Like, I'm not saying that a man can't change, and I'm not saying that, you know, you should be held to the standard of your previous, you know, errors in your way. All I'm saying is like, yo, there's some significant history to suggest that this is a possibility, you know?
Sure.
So him coming out and saying that's not what happened, I kind of like the fact that he's here now. You know, as an adult, he's more of a man now, and he's like, nah, that's trash. I didn't do that. But also, yeah. When I first saw that, I was like, hey, Wayne's up to his old tricks again.
Well, it to me, it just seems to be Wayne Rooney and to be traveling abroad with your team. You're on an away game. And what, are you just going to cheat on your wife? Like, it just seems a little ridiculous and a little hard to believe, given that the sort of the high profile status. Like, he's not even, he's clearly more famous than everyone else on his team. And the focus will be on him.
Christian,
like,
this is how he did it in England, where he was 17 billion times more famous. What are you talking about?
Oh, it just seems like a bad strategy. That's all I'm saying. Like,
it's been a bad strategy since he first did it.
Okay,
this is not. That's what I'm saying. Like, none of it's all circumstantial. You know what I mean? And I could see why a magazine would try to sort of embellish just him doing this, because it's a believable report, but he's literally done this many times, you know.
He's like, but yeah, it's a, but not this time, okay? He's been good in America, okay?
Yeah, he's like, yo, this ain't fair. The one time I don't, you know, he comes out, he's like, you know how many times y'all haven't caught me? Like, this isn't.
This is
Wayne,
bad. This
Wayne,
is
don't bad. Stop, Wayne.
Okay, you're incriminating yourself, buddy. Turn it down.
He's like, here, let me just show you pictures on my phone. I'm just saying, like, y'all didn't see this, you know.
So that is it. Things that we didn't get to in the our earlier episode this week. So make sure again, if you want to help and support the show and help us travel, help us get like bigger interviews, help us do all these things, and you want some exclusive content with that as well, make sure you join the Gully Squad. Go to soccercooligans.com/Gully Squad and donate, you know, and support whatever amount you think you're comfortable with. Some people are, you know,
and we've said this before and we'll say it again, all of that money goes right back into the show. It all goes to keeping the podcast popping. It all goes to us getting to go to events and interview some of those folks for you, and all of those things, you know, trying to get to some of the bigger games. We want to get out to your city. We want to perform for you, the fans. Like, if you have an opportunity where, you know, you can sign up for Gully Squad, go to soccercooligans.com/Gully Squad and know that makes a difference in us getting a chance to visit your stadium, to visit you as the fans, to put on large events.
And just to reiterate, thank you again to Gully Squad for all the support, because these wins, these successes that we are lucky enough to have is because of you guys. Like, little things lead to another, you know, like us being able to travel to different cities, going to MLS Cup, going to All-Star Game, having, you know, not having to, you know, flights are expensive. The hotels are expensive. A lot of these things, and being able to get the like kind of bigger interviews and connect with people, it leads to these types of accomplishments and things like that. So
yeah.
a lot of these things.
And if we haven't said it before, we wouldn't have gotten, you know, where we've been if it wasn't for the things that happened to us before. Getting a chance to be on OG Podcast Network was huge. That studio space made it so much easier for us to get players and to get folks to come up. And if it wasn't for Gully Squad, we wouldn't have been able to get to some of the events and make some of the content that undoubtedly had been, that was referenced in the meeting when we decided to sign with Fubo. Yeah. So it's legit. When we say it's because of you, we legitimately mean that. If you are a member of Gully Squad and you're listening to this podcast, you had a hand in helping us succeed. And that means the absolute world to us. You legitimately helped us get to where we're at and where we're going. And we want to stress this more than anything else. We want to do all of this to continue to entertain you guys.
Yeah, Yeah, can't say it better myself. So thank you for all the support. So we want to get to our interview with Charles Bohm. This was recorded at MLS All-Star. And like we said, make sure you follow Charles Bohm. You'll love him after you you hear him. But Charles is a storied soccer journalist. He's been covering American soccer for a while, and just knows his stuff, and is very much connected to the growth of the sport. And we're happy to call him a friend. He's a great dude, and always been really supportive of us. And we were happy we got to talk to him out in Orlando.
All right, let's get to that.
Yeah, baby, we're back.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now they have allowed us in the MLS Digital HQ.
It only took 14 different credentials, 3 vouchers, and a sailboat to let us in here.
You guys have been chipped. Don't worry.
Yeah, that's right. We have been chipped, bro. They're following us, man. Big brother, Big Don Garber is following us.
No, this has been quite an experience. So far, we're at the Ace Cafe, where we did the EMLS challenge. That was really, really fun.
A couple of hacks did a show last night, I hear.
So, okay. All right. That is, Alexis. Nista voices opinion at all.
Wow, okay.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. Everybody gets it.
So, as we were here early for like the EMLS stuff, but then, you know, the MLS journalists, they don't show up. They don't show up for that stuff.
They show up when they damn well please.
Yeah, they're like, oh, these video games, oh, real cute, okay? I'm here to talk about Tam and Gam, yeah, right? So, but we are joined by our next guest that Alexis will introduce right now.
That's right. I mean, you've heard him on our show before. Never physically been on our show before, yeah, though. This is exciting. Ladies and gentlemen, unless you're driving, put your hands together for the one, the only, Charles Bohm, everybody.
Hey, Charles.
So great to be here, guys. Thanks
for having
me. There
it is. That's the excitement you expected.
Yeah, man. So weird to hang out with you guys sober.
Yeah. That's right. We've got problems. We've been crushing late nights.
Yeah, we usually have a drink over AA. Yeah. You know how we do.
AA is what we say when Charles walks in the room. AA, look who it is. It's Charles.
No, man. If again, apologies for my voice.
Yeah.
If you heard our prior episodes this week, it'll all make sense. But
dude, he did karaoke, took it too far. Whitney Houston, I said, you can't hit them notes, bro.
And I said, don't you dare suggest I cannot hit those notes. Yeah.
That'll do you good, though. That'll work, right? That'll fix it all.
It's helping. So if you guys don't know Charles Bohm, been a writer for MLS Soccer for quite a while.
Is it like ages. Poem or Bohm?
Yeah, poem.
Oh, all right. Well, I've been mispronouncing it this
really,
whole time.
Actually, though, when I meet German people, they're like, you know, you mispronounce that name.
How is that? How do they say it?
It should have an umlaut in it. It's like Bohm.
Bohm?
Yeah, but I'm like, come on. You know, we're in the new world now.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, son. We've got to
anglicize.
We've
got to anglicize this business.
We won the war. We can say however we want here.
So how many All-Star games has it been for you? How about we start there?
Oh, man. So this is I didn't. It's my third straight, so it's become a habit the last 3 years, but I was kind of hit or miss here and there. So it's probably like fifth or sixth. Actually, one of the first things I ever covered, like when I first started doing this moonlighting way back in the day, was I just happened to start covering DC United in 2004.
Yeah.
And the
you heard the echo on that one?
The last edition of the East versus West format at RFK Stadium that year. That was the summer of Freddie Adu.
Ooh, wow. We all remember where we were.
Freddie Adon't.
And they played at RFK, and for some reason the TV time dictated that it was played at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something on a 95 degree day in DC. And except for Frankie Hadick, everybody else was kind of like shambling around the field, sweating and in pain. And they're like, man, I think I can't say this is gospel, but my memory is that led the league to kind of go, man, we got to reimagine this All-Star thing,
yeah,
and make it more interesting. And that led to the international teams, you know, the overseas teams.
Yeah. So it's because of your reporting.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, a lot of people don't know this, but weather doesn't affect Frankie like Yaduk.
No, it's true.
Also antibiotics.
His circuitry is heat resistant.
He's a different human being. He's different
built
creature.
Different. He's from Southern California and found joy in Columbus, Ohio. He is built differently.
The 16 espresso shots he takes before every soccer event. Yeah. They work hot, cold, whatever. Doesn't matter.
That's a wild, wild man.
So you have been covering MLS for a long time, and these All-Star games I think it's for us also the last three straight, right?
Three straight.
Chicago, yeah. Atlanta, and now this one.
Yeah.
We're sort of already noticing the budgets kind of increasing, right? It seems like the showmanship is growing. Mm-hmm. There seems to be we've had this conversation a lot of like, you know, what is the real benefit of doing something this big? Should MLS like sort of go this hard into an All-Star game when it doesn't really, you know, doesn't seem to match like the energy of like an NBA All-Star game?
But then don't you, to some degree, you know, the other part of that is like, if you don't do that, will it ever, you know, sometimes you can manifest your own destiny.
Sure. But in soccer, All-Star games don't really get that much.
Then no one else does it.
I got to tell you guys, though, I don't know the numbers offhand, but the game tends to get some of the best ratings of the year.
Okay.
You get a little more juice from having an overseas team that brings its fans and its traditions and that quality, of course. Mm-hmm. And I think that, what I tell people is you don't have to take this thing seriously. You don't have to buy into all the hype, but just try and recognize it for what it is. It's a spectacle. It's something enjoyable. And now this year, you know, they brought back the Skills Challenge, which was something that was canceled. And, you know, way back in the early years of the league, they did it. And they're trying to bring that back and do kind of make it more like what NBA and NFL do, or MLB is a better example, where like you can watch the game or not, care about the game or not, but it's an event and it's fun to maybe watch the
pageantry stuff around it.
And the practical approach is, and this conversation happens around the Super Draft too. People are like, oh, why are we still doing a Super Draft? It's terrible. It stinks. It doesn't matter. But just the logistics of the league are, now that the MLS Cup final is held at this, you know, the host, the finalists, one of the finalists, they can't, you know, you, as a league, you have to have certain sort of tentpole events where you can build, you know, a little hoopla, host your sponsors, try and like, you know, wine and dine your VIPs, maybe have a special experience for people in and around the league,
of course, and
plan things out and do cool stuff. And the Super Draft and the All-Star game are like two of the only ones left, you know, because you can't do that at MLS Cup anymore. So it has that practical feature, and the league, you know, executives get together for meetings. I think there's a board of directors meeting. So they have to gather.
Strange that we weren't invited to it. I think we...
I know, right? Same here.
Yeah, but you know, we could still sneak in. That's possible.
Turn that camera off. We'll suss this out. Yeah.
That's right. We talked about it on another episode. It's a little bit of a glad handing for some of the big sponsors. And like you said, the VIPs, it's the chance. You can't plan where the MLS Cup is, but you know where MLS All-Star is going to be the day. They're probably going to announce it the day after the game here, right?
Usually they're somewhere around.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll know next year, and you and I could plan out. We can all plan out. But it's also like a cool opportunity for all of us to meet. Do you get anything done by being around some of the other journalists?
For sure. Yeah? For sure. And it's getting together with peers and colleagues, but also just anytime a critical mass of executives, players, coaches, anybody gets together, it's a good place to be. You know, you have an interesting conversations. I give the league's communication department a lot of credit because the access to players is great.
Yeah.
Like this morning it was a little hot and sunny and pitch side at Explorer Stadium, but they, you know, how many places and how many times do you have Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Wayne Rooney, Carlos Vela, Bastian Schweinsteiger, like this like murderer's row of like elite players just walking through a gathering of media, and you might get a couple minutes, you might even get 5 minutes. Like, media from all over the world are here. It's a great way to talk to players, and you don't necessarily have to only talk about the All-Star game. You can have interesting discussions, and I got to have a couple of great sit downs with some players this week and some executives. Really excited to tell some of those stories over the next few days, especially excited about like Mark Anthony Kay, for example. Like I'm based across the continent from that guy, but I got to sit and talk with him for 20 minutes and learn a lot about the dude. And that doesn't happen very often outside of a setting like this.
Yeah, right. I'm curious because we've seen you like working, right? And actually being like a journalist gumshoe, like really trying to get the scoop, right? And it's great to see, but you also work for the league, right? Mm-hmm. So is there a not necessarily like a limit or if you're like bridled in some way, mm-hmm. but is there a you know you still have to show some respect for your employer, and you can't cross a line when it comes to trying to get a scoop. Do you ever feel stuck a little bit in trying to do your job in the most efficient way?
It's an interesting topic, and it comes up a lot because people have a whole range of opinions and viewpoints on the league website.
And I'm sure you hear them all.
The league, yeah, people have some takes, but I should point out here, my main client is MLSsoccer.com, but I'm a freelancer, okay. So I write for multiple sites and different sites.
It's a good time to apologize for the noise in the background.
Just some furniture moving happening.
We are in Digital HQ, and they must be setting up for a different shoot downstairs.
Sure.
So if you're hearing that in the background, I apologize. Also, it's not the kid upstairs. Stop yelling at your neighbors.
So every site has its own voice, has its own standards and things it wants to cover. And when I file something for, let's say, the league website, it goes through an editorial process. And if people on the edit desk or above me on the chain decide that they need to adjust text or that they need to get call or email someone at the league office and get their perspective, like that, those things do happen. But we're still trying to break news where possible, you know, provide storytelling, new information, whatever we can, like a whole range of stuff. And so there's things that I write that go on the league site, and there's things that I find out that I cover or write about that I know are best suited for another site. So I'm thankful to have that, you know, that option. And I think in general, a lot of the people I work with on the league site are committed to providing as much information, telling as many stories. And sometimes that even, you know, leads to friction with, let's say, someone in the PR department who comes at things from a different angle, and there's a back and forth there. And, you know, we everybody gets their say in and tries to find the right path forward.
How much do you have to fight for some stories to be told where the league would be like, all right, well, we don't know where you got this information, but we don't want this to go out before they go out? Is that something that happens from time to time? Do you have to, which happens in all major news publications, you know, someone will be like, we can't say this. Does that ever happen to you? And how difficult does it make it for you to have to sort of fight for that story?
I really haven't had that issue. I think it's possible that others may have, others who get their hands on more sensitive information. I haven't been censored or cut off. What's more likely to happen is that I hear from somebody at a club who doesn't like something I wrote, and they give you a call and tell you what they think of what you did and why they don't think that that's the right decision. And they have their say and I have mine. And sometimes we don't agree. And that is
just like,
what it
is. Hey, Charlie, baby,
come on. What are you doing? Burn. What are you doing?
I thought we were buddies. What's going on?
You missed the umlaut. I missed the days when we got along. Yeah.
You know, what I'd say is it's a lot of forward positive progress has been made in recent years, because when the league, going back to 2010 when it became MLSsoccer.com, and the league decided to sort of create this robust media presence through the league site, that everybody is sort of taking it as they go, and there's been a sort of a path taken from here to there. I think now more than ever, you can get a lot of information, and thankfully, like, I've been there long enough that I would like to think that I have like a relationship of trust with a lot of the people involved in this. So, you know, I don't they know that I'm coming at things from the right perspective, trying to be as ethical as I can, be as fair as I can, and they may not like it, but you know, that's the next phase. When you look at NFL.com and some of these other sites that sort of live in a similar place in their landscape, you know, not everybody involved in that league organization is going to like what they see on the site.
Of course.
That's the deal, but they're going to see other stuff that they do like. And one of the funniest things to me is that when you talk to players or managers or whatever executives, they'll be like, "No, I don't read clips. I don't read the media coverage. I don't read y'all site."
Right.
But everybody in the league, whether they're doing it on an anonymous browser or not, you know, they're watching to see how they're covered. They love having their their club logo or their star player or their story up there in the in lights on the front page. They all want that. They all want it to be good.
You know, we had, I won't say his name, but we had another journalist on the show, and he would do like basically live streams, like on Periscope. And you know, a lot of times you see like four or five people watching, like a lot, you know, if you don't have a popular account, nobody's really watching your live stream, but you can on Periscope, you can see who watched.
Right? Yeah.
And
it's like a who's who.
Yeah. He puts it up and he's like, yo, there's like players. There are players around the league that are watching my little, you know, Periscope stream and who seem to be very interested in what I have to say. But of course, they would never suggest or imply that they.
And
yeah,
players see it or there's watch a player's it. Grapevine for sure, man. And some of the dudes across
those
the league.
Group chats must be a wild.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I know some of them use text. Probably some WhatsApp groups that are popping off because they're all when there's a good article that or they think is, you know, touches on important stuff, like it gets around, man. Actually, Mark Anthony tripped me out a little bit yesterday because I had never met him before, and we shake hands and he's like, it's good to put a face to the Twitter account.
Oh,
I'm like,
boy.
Oh,
yeah, okay. All right. Streets is watching.
Yeah.
They're
always
away?
Watching for those haters.
Yeah. How far away are we from a league where the teams start to manufacture a little bit of controversy for more views and more buzz?
Well, there's this guy named Zlatan.
Yeah.
Heard of. No,
he's a self-made controversy machine.
No, I think that's a great question. And I think the issue is that, we've built this news gathering and information gathering apparatus on the league site. Most of the club sites are a little bit different, right? And some of them don't have the same resources as others. There's some that have like a columnist for the, you know, and that's watching every game, that's doing stuff. There's some that have a really robust local kind of engine that they do, and the others that are just kind of doing, you know, just trying to get through and can't or won't put a lot of resources in. I think that's the next phase. The thing is, if you have someone who's, and I mean this in a neutral way, like if you have a suit, someone from an executive perspective who's maybe has a PR mindset, they're going to be typically, in my experience, you know, mindful or come from a perspective of control and cleanliness, and like they don't want to deal with anything messy. And when you start to get into perspectives or drama or anything, you know, things get messy, and sometimes you don't have full control, right? Oh, the trains are coming.
Yeah, the train is.
Yeah, they gave us a hotel near a train.
I think Atlanta United just scored a goal in Orlando City.
Ooh, ouch.
So speaking of that, let's talk about you. Some of those controversies. There have been a couple this week that come to mind. The sort of beef between Frank DeBoer and PT Martinez and LGP going like on record saying that he doesn't like the way the team is set up and the way that they're playing.
And Barco, Ezequiel Barco said something similar.
Yeah. How do you think that one just affects the team? How does that make Frank DeBoer look? And what have you sort of heard about what's going on in that locker room?
Yeah, you know, it's so sad to see a long-suffering club like Atlanta United encounter more adversity.
Years. I mean, these fans drama. Have just been waiting since they were children for this to turn
around.
They've
gone through a lot, you know? Yeah. No, I think that's been a long time coming. When I watch them this season on the field, there's this sense I get that they're playing with a handbrake, kind of, you know? And it's complicated, and we probably can't get into all the nuances here, so, you know, Ryan and all those guys at Atlanta United, I recognize this is a nuanced situation. It was always a tough job for Frank DeBoer to come in and succeed.
Sure.
Tata Martino, who had just won a trophy and had this like almost father-like relationship with a lot of his players.
So.
Especially the Latino cats were like, they loved him. He connected with them so well. That whole team had this fury that they played with. Like they were, and I talked to people who cover the team, you know, and know those players well. Like it was like they're just, and it's, you see it with Almeida, with the Quakes this year, certain charismatic coaches who can make their players like die for them. Right.
Yeah.
So that was such a tight bond. Obviously it ended with so much success last year. And now Frank has to come in and he brings his own principles, his own background, and he's got to win them over while sort of trying to implement what he thinks is best for this group of players. And it's always going to, you know, be tough to do that. And I think just the idea, and you know, they went defensive last year, right? Like in the playoffs, like a lot of their success in the postseason was Tata reeling in that like circus high wire attacking mindset and grinding out games and just grinding teams down. And so you could argue maybe that's there's a similarity to what De Boer
was genius
them.
Against the Red Bulls.
Yeah, I mean it worked well, but that was by that point. Tata had so much buy-in from those guys. Like he had, they would do whatever he wanted and they all got it. They all saw the vision. Right now, even, you know, on paper, you could say Frank de Boer is a good choice, right? He played in Spain, speaks Spanish. He's got that Dutch mindset. I mean, the Dutch love attacking soccer, right? But he has just a different concept of control and a different sort of default that he wants from his players. And I think they feel constrained. You know, they feel like they are, they're not as entertaining and that's not as it's not as much fun for them. And it's not like they're doing badly in the standings, but things didn't go well in CCL. You know, they're just not at the same heights. My question, my concern, I guess if I was an Atlanta person is if the results come, great, if they do a deep postseason run. But at this point, I think it's in danger of messing with their brand, meaning like the identity they have and the thing that gets those fans in that huge stadium hyped up and like packing that place, which is like, you know, greatest show on turf. Like we're going to like they would just put teams to the sword last year. And that's not happening the same way this year. And I think when, you know, and at some point, I think those guys like LGP and those guys felt like they weren't being heard internally. And so eventually,
It's going to get out,
right? The media.
I mean, the Piti getting subbed off in the 60th minute, the last game, visibly unhappy with the decision. A lot of our Atlanta United friends are just like, why is he coming off? Don't understand. And, you know, at the beginning of the year when they were having that rough time in CCL and the rough time in the beginning of the season, they were already like De Boer out. But now it's like it's a weird, ever since he's gotten a couple wins, they're like baffled. Like it's more confusing rather than just like get him out of here. It's just like, what is he doing? Mm-hmm. So, and then that's like the frustrating sort of thing.
But he also has like a background, like he has a like pedigree, I believe is the term you use. He has a resume. He's found success where he's gone. Mm-hmm. He came from Ajax, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm.
and he did great things in their academy, but his last two stops were not successful. When they hired him and they announced his hire, Carlos Bocanegra kind of termed that as like, well, he's got a chip on his shoulder. You know, he's got something to prove here. But like
that's how you spin that, though.
Right. Yeah. I think PT is a great example of MLS getting into new territory here. When you spend on players and get into a different sort of luxury class of talent and mentality, there's more complications that come with that. So in the old days, right, the coaches had long leashes in this league, and if a player didn't like it, they generally weren't many indispensable players, right?
Right.
And now you have a coach for a while was openly, I think they've sort of quashed it a little bit, but like the most expensive player in league history is openly beefing with the new coach.
Yeah.
And feels like he's moved from River Plate and reigning South American Player of the Year to like he's getting treated like some rookie at this team. And you know, you can't in principle, like you'd love to say like, oh, we treat all our players the same, but you can't treat a $17 million player right. the same way you treat everybody else.
You got to treat
a $1,700 player.
This is the reality.
Yeah.
But I thought I kind of crossed a line, crossed the bridge myself in looking at that LAFC game on Friday. I was like, okay, you know, Frank's the boss, right? De Boer makes the decisions. It's still his call. And then for me, the way he yanked him out in that situation in a big game against the league leaders, tight game in that moment.
Yeah.
And he'd made a few errors, PT had, but he'd also played a few incredible balls. You want his quality in a game like that that's decided by moments. Like you want your best players on the pitch. And he pulls him off. And I'm like, are you just making a point?
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like it was more of a show. Mm-hmm. Than on purpose.
And he said, you know, his explanation afterwards, I think, was, you know, I had to get Barco on. They're the same type of player, same position. The only person I could take off was PT. And I'm just not.
Yeah.
I don't find that a compelling explanation.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
Like you're playing the runaway league leaders, LAFC team on pace to be the best team in MLS history. And you're going to pull off your big gun like that?
Yeah. Like, but it would have been worse if he was like, well, he said some not so nice things about me. So you are out.
I'm the boss. Worse.
Yeah.
You do not hurt the boss's feelings that way.
I told you I knew Spanish. I don't care if you're going to Argentina, Anita. I'm listening. You know, players like this, Whenever you're interviewing a player, if someone has like a beef with the coach, do you feel like you've ever been used to get that message out?
Sometimes. Now, there's some players. Again, this is elite player tactics. Like if you to use the media that way. And occasionally, I think I felt that, but in a lot of cases, you know, that's a mutually beneficial manipulation because, yeah. I mean, I actually had a moment like this. Pablo Maurer and I were one of or two of just a couple of journalists that were in the scrum for Bruce Arena after the Revolution came back to or he was Arena's like big homecoming to DC right. United.
Yeah,
it was his first game.
We were at that game.
Yeah. At Audi Field. Yeah. His first game back as a competitive, you know, as a coach. And
so he dropped that no history bomb, right?
Right. So we were like, so Pablo asked what we both thought was kind of like a throwaway question to get him just talking about coming back to the stadium. But the club that he helped build, where he won the trophies and built the first dynasty in MLS, finally has their stadium that they were waiting for 20 years. And Bruce gets to come back. And he had been a guest of honor at the debut of the stadium and everything. But we're like, you know, this is his first time on the sidelines. He's going to talk a little, some nice, you know, maybe whatever. And Bruce is like, popped off, like made a point to kind of say, I didn't feel anything. Right?
Wow.
There's no history. They don't appreciate their history here. And Pablo and I looked over at each other, we're like, oh, like he's that's not an accident.
No,
like,
yeah.
Bruce has got something on his mind, right? So we circled back. I think I asked another, came back to the topic later, and Bruce went. That was when he just flamed the club for what he perceives as their lack of history. And you're like, all right, so if I'm the mouthpiece for Bruce here, like that's part of the job because yeah. Bruce had some stuff to say.
Yeah, somebody had to relay it.
It's fun. It's a fun moment in those situations sometimes to be the one that gets it and gets it out and starts that conversation.
Do you find like does that excite you when all of a sudden somebody just starts going off and you're like, oh, that was off my question? Or for you, is it like just part of the job? Like that means you did your job well that day.
Yeah, there's. I think any person who is in this business would say there's still little bit of a rush you get from knowing you got something good.
Yeah, because
right?
we know that Zlatan, the way he gets amped up is by absolutely belittling other human beings on the pitch. Right? What
comparing them to failing car car brands.
What gets Charles Bohm going?
What a disaster for Fiat, man. Fiat did not deserve that shave, man.
Fiat's like, still pretty good. Come on.
Perfectly
classic brand.
Yeah. Put it on a banner.
Our maintenance record's far better than those Ferraris,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
No, but I think, and Zlatan, man, we could do a whole show about the psychology of Zlatan.
Fiat's like, just like that player's skull, we have crumble zones.
So yeah, I mean, it's fun to be the one that breaks something. That's the peak, right?
Yeah.
If you got some dirt.
Yeah.
Or something that's not out there and you can be the first, like, that's fun. You know, the thing I described with Bruce, like that's a little bit of a right place, right time situation. And it's, you know, a little lower level, but it's still great to be part of that because, again, we're finally getting to a maturity level as a league here where there's subplots, there's characters, right. There's personalities that people care about. There's games. And you know, Zlatan, like we know he crosses lines, right? We know it's not all right for him to like belittle others, to injure others, to sort of wage a psychological warfare beyond a certain point. But this league has for so long struggled for relevance to carve out a place in this really crowded landscape, right? And to be something that's must-see television or destination viewing. That's right. What it's all about. That's what Atlanta United did that changed the game. That's what, I mean, LAFC are doing it in a different way this year. Zlatan does it on a personal level. You know, being based in D.C., I see Rooney, who's not even like he's not an outspoken guy.
Yeah, no.
But his sheer quality and his track record gets people interested. It makes people care. And that's what makes ratings go up. That's what makes properties, these television properties and these sports properties valuable. And that's good for everyone. Even if you don't like the story that's being told, you got to recognize that something you care about matters to more people, and in the long run, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's where people like us step in to, you know, talk about all the beef, all the gossip.
That's right.
We need y'all. We need y'all.
Someone's got to be sassy. You know what I mean?
Just a tad. You know,
get it out there.
And hasn't the culture, right? And I know we toss that term around too much, but like the culture is maturing, is growing, is more diverse. There's more stuff there for more people. And like y'all are a big part of that. Like,
thank you.
The off field stuff, even if whether it's banter, whether it's jokes, cracks, whatever, like that's what we need, and honestly, even players and coaches recognize that. You know,
sure.
That means a lot to us. Cause like what we're, you know, sometimes we're like, you know, we know we're not the main course, but like everybody likes a little dessert. You know what I mean? Like you watch the game. Don't you want to have something fun that's around the game afterwards? And we hopefully we provide that.
Point is that we're very fattening.
Yeah, of course. And we're going to give you diabetes. But we're also sweet. So
you still got that.
So you like us, you know?
You have another question?
I do. You know, you've worked a while in American soccer, and I know you were asked about sort of how far we've come looking at events like this, players you get to talk about now, like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, starting to get older, but there's also the younger. We're getting to a point where great teams are starting to argue that they're not good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, just a little tidbit about where you think the league will be in another 5 years. We're starting to get some big name coaches. We're starting to get some younger DPs, things like that. It's increased so much in the last 3 years that we've been coming. Where do you think, like, in 5 years from now, the league's going to be?
So from a real, like, 50,000 foot viewpoint, I think the expansion is reaching a point where, like, so we're at 27 right now, right? If you count the incoming and confirmed expansion teams, I think they're going to two more, probably going to 30. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes beyond that to 32. What's the logical stopping point? And then at some point, is that starts to get cumbersome in the sense of scheduling and logistics of things and the competitive aspect of it. You know, when you compare it to 20 team leagues that are sort of maybe the norm around the world, and this league has always lived in that funny place between the major American pro sports leagues and the global comparisons to the biggest soccer leagues in the world. So I think, you know, we're and the USL and all the interactions of the different levels of the pyramid, I think there's some big picture stuff that's going to happen, and I have no idea how they're going to resolve all that. In the near term, something a little more closer to the pitch that I'm fascinated by is the rise of celebrity coaches, right? So we saw Tata came in and just kicked a hole in this league, changed the game, changed the perception internally, externally, showed what's possible. And now this year, I'm fascinated and entertained by what Matias Almeida is doing with San Jose Earthquakes.
Yeah.
Like that guy took, people were ripping on that roster. I mean, people were, even he at the beginning was like, you know, this is going to take years, right? Like people were just so down on that group of players, and they bought into this guy's philosophies
Then Tommy Thompson download Duolingo and everything changed.
Everything changed. He was like, I'll order my own burrito. Thank you very much. And here
Big
we
up
are.
Tommy, man. I got to give him credit because he's like almost like the poster child of that team, because super talented kid, crazy skills. I've loved watching him for a while. I've been rooting for him. And now it's like nobody seemed to get the most out of him. It was like a wasted American talent, it possibly, you know, that risk. And now this one coach, like, and like, you could argue like that coaches could be the next designated players, right?
Because there's no
ceiling on their salary, right? Yeah. There's no, like, if a guy like Almeida is going to come, like, why not aim higher, aim bigger? Like a good coach can have a transformative effect. And I think we've had low expectations for our coaches for a long time. But, you know,
the next coach of Atlanta United, Jose Mourinho.
I think a lot of times people are always hesitant to hire a Spanish speaking coach. So I'm glad U.S. soccer didn't even bother with Tata, right?
Yeah.
You know,
don't need him.
Clearly wouldn't have worked out, right?
This U.S.-Mexico subplot now, where for at least the next 2 years, there's going to be these parallel rivals. And I know a lot of American fans are already looking south enviously and looking at what Tata's done in a really short amount of time with Mexico. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, could be a rough look for the decision makers of the federation. But I think it's obvious now, right? Like, it wasn't just about an English speaker. It was an American.
Yeah,
and the vocabulary they use when they announced Berhalter, and this is in no way to minimize Greg Berhalter's quality as a coach, his abilities, but it was clear that they felt they had to hire an American. I can't relate to that. I don't think that's the modern game, but a lot of people do feel that way. A lot of people really sincerely, passionately feel that you need to be able to speak English because that's what the majority of this country speaks to communicate, and that we need to have an American because, you know, that's the norm elsewhere too. Like a lot of countries have this patriotic element, and I don't mess with it. That's my angle, but that's what they chose, and now we'll all watch it play out.
Okay, well, then we're gonna write about it and talk about it.
Yeah, we'll certainly make fun of it. You know, that's what we'll do.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for joining us. I'm glad you instead of calling in this time, you know, you got to be next to us, and it's good to be within, you know,
knee touching,
so close to his exposed knees.
Where could players secretly follow you? what Instagram and what Twitter?
I'm at CBOEHM. And what's my Insta? I'm not as active on Insta. I think it's Charles
MLSsoccer.com.
Yeah,
MLSsoccer.com. A bunch of other websites.
For sure.
You post all your links on CBOEM.
Yep, that's the Twitter handle.
So go to CBOEM, check it out. I mean, you know, incredible articles, great dude.
Incredible.
And if you find yourself anywhere near him at a bar, order him an old fashioned. You'll enjoy it.
That's how you get to his heart.
That's right.
Charles, thank you so much for joining us, man. We
pleasure,
really appreciate
guys.
It.
Pleasure. Right.
Charlie BOEM.
Charlie Chuck. Charles.
Come on.
BOEM, great, great dude. I'm glad we got to hang out with him in Orlando. And yeah, it's just like we said prior, make sure you give him a follow at CBOEHM on Twitter. He's that's where he posts a lot of his work, and he just, again, he does a lot for American soccer. And it'd be great if you checked out his work. So that's it.
An incredible writer, and lucky that we get to have him as a friend.
Exactly. So that is it, everyone. We thank you again for listening.
It's another Gully Squad episode in the books.
Exactly. You know, little by little, you know, we have to, you know, always make sure we show love to the people who show love to us. And Gully Squad are the people who do exactly that. So, again, if you want to support the show, go to soccercooligans.com/Gully Squad and give whatever you like. It truly, truly makes a huge difference, and you'll get access to some fun stuff. So, with that said, my name is Christian Polanco.
I am Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
What are we?
Oh, the Cooligans! All right, you got me there.